And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 3rd, 2021. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I am happy to be here and looking forward to talking about what happened in Texas and why it connects to climate change in Massachusetts. So tune in.
Well, Mariah, I went so far as to look up in the online Merriam-Webster dictionary the definition of the word microcosm. And it's basically a very small kind of thing that has all of the characteristics of a much, much bigger thing. And in that sense, I think the events over the last 10 or 15 days in Texas are kind of a microcosm of the whole climate change issue. So I thought we ought to talk about it just because there's a lot of interesting stuff there. Just to get us all square on the same page, let me remind everyone that in late February 2021, there was something called a weather event called the polar vortex, in which a huge chunk of Arctic air detached itself and drunkenly staggered into the United States and essentially turned the middle part of the country into a freezer. I mean, literally. What happened is that in Texas, the temperatures went down below zero. Right? So if you can imagine the Lone Ranger or the Mambo Man strolling across the sunset with sub-zero temperatures, that's what Texas was like last week. And Texas is not accustomed to that kind of thing. And everyone has little electric space heaters, or and because of the cold weather, demand rose up. The power system couldn't handle the demand because it was already damaged by the cold. And most of the state experienced rolling blackouts, which were devastating, right? Mariah, did you see anything about that?
Yeah, the stories are awful, right? I've heard all kinds of conflicting reports about anywhere from 23 to 50 people died. And I remember reading a story about a mom who's, you know, tried to light a fire to keep her house warm at night. And her three little children and her mother all died when the house burned down from the fire. And she was rescued by a neighbor, and it's just, I mean, it's just crushing. Super sad.
Yeah, I mean, there are awful stories of carbon monoxide poisoning or people just dying in the cold. I mean, but I guess, why should we be talking about this in a climate context? Well, I think that just to tick off some of the reasons that seem to me at the top of the heap. One is that this whole polar vortex thing, or the extreme cold weather in Texas, is likely to be an example of an extreme climate-related event driven by climate change that is way out of the ordinary, sort of these once-in-a-century events that happen on alternate years kind of thing. And that already is a harbinger of all the bad things that might happen. Texas, it turns out, is this special case. So Texas, because it's the Lone Star State, is very fiercely independent in a lot of ways, does not want to be subject to any federal regulation, and so has sealed off Texas borders electrically. And so all of Texas is serviced by, or most of Texas is serviced by, this organization called ERCOT, which is the Electrical Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT. Well, and what happened was that within Texas, because of the high demand, they could not import power from other states. So when everything collapsed in Texas, they were turned into a third world country for more than a few hours. Other topics that come up here is that because everything collapsed that way in Texas, you suddenly have an environmental justice crisis, because the people who are the most vulnerable are the ones that are freezing their butts off, that have to burn the couch in order to keep the house warm, right? And then risk death. There was a strong element of climate denial, because the Texas governor, even as his people are freezing, jumps on TV and says, oh, this is an example of why the Green New Deal is a bad idea, because look, all the wind turbines froze, which we'll talk about. And that's why we have to have fossil fuels. And it's just outright lies that these guys have come back to almost immediately upon any in any disaster. And finally, there's a question of whether or not this is a hint of the future, in the sense that last summer we saw California burning. They had rolling electrical blackouts because the power system couldn't dance around the fires in California. Now we have this horrific event in Texas where, again, Texas is, as I said, reduced to a third world country. I mean, we are, as a civilization, are fragile and dependent on electricity in ways that we can't even imagine. And if one of these things, if a climate event like this happens again, which it will, we're vulnerable. And then you end up with this cascade of terrible things that happen, like your electricity goes out, then you can't pump water if you live in Texas. Then you have sewer and health problems, and it just goes on and on. And it's not a good thing. So, Mariah, let me, of all this sort of, multiple perspectives here, which one caught your eye? Which one grinds your gears the most?
Yeah, I mean, so I think that, understandably, Texas was not prepared for this because it costs a lot of money to set yourself up to be prepared for this. You have to invest, you know, when you're, if you are a utility and you're planning out how to address power needs, you are going to think of the worst case scenarios, but you're not going to think of the worst case scenarios that only happen every 100 years and plan for that, because that's very expensive. And it doesn't make sense. You would pass that expense back to your, the users, the end users. And so you don't want to do that unless you absolutely have to. So in some sense, you know, planning for this kind of thing that happens so rarely is not something that would be necessarily expected. And I think that sort of stands out to me as one of the biggest problems with climate change, is that we can't anticipate what's going to happen because it's so different than the stable weather that we've known for so many hundreds of years. We've been able to predict it based on prior records, and we've had some sense of what's going to happen. And now we're in this very strange place. Catherine Hayhoe, she's a scientist at Texas Tech, atmospheric scientist at Texas Tech, calls it global weirding, which I think is an accurate description. Everything's so strange that we can't even make the predictions that we need to be able to plan for addressing the problems that are coming down the pipeline. No pun intended.
Yeah, I mean,
pipeline in this case.
I mean, the whole question of how to improve, as you say, the resilience, because we know that there's going to be crazier and crazier events. And what does the society do about that at the minimizing cost? I mean, you're right. At some level, Texas probably thought that a freeze of the kind that happened last week is roughly the equivalent of an asteroid falling into Texas, right? I mean, it might happen, but do you really want to, you know, how much can you plan for it? We'll put aside the fact that the exact same scenario played out in 2011 and everyone forgot, right. We conveniently forgot that. Right. But yeah, these rare events get passed on as costs, and everyone's trying to avoid costs, especially in Texas, because Texans are so smart, they have made everything privatized, right? So there's no public utilities in Texas. There's only for-profit power generation organizations, and they certainly don't want to take on any cost for protecting the society, right? They just want to make money for as a side note, let me just – one of the things is that in Texas, because of the deregulation and the fact that all of the operators are for profit, it is possible for you as a homeowner in Texas to buy power at the wholesale rate, which is the rate that the utilities would buy at. Okay, but in most of the time, that's very cheap compared to sort of retail electricity like you and I pay. But the wholesale price can skyrocket to thousands of dollars a kilowatt hour when things go bad. And if you're a retail person, you're protected from that. But if you've signed on to a wholesale contract, you are now subject to all of the whims of the market. And so there are people in Texas who got bills for $20,000 or $30,000 that came out of the blue because they were paying the wholesale price. So for this period where they got no electricity, they got a $30,000 bill. It's just amazing.
And it's serious, right? A lot of people can't pay that bill. They were thinking they were lucky because they still had electricity and heat until they got a $30,000 bill for 4 days, right? I mean, how do you pay that?
Well, funny you should ask, because there was so much stuff going back and forth online. And on Twitter, there were examples where the company was, I think the company was called Gritty, which is like a horrible name, but they were saying, oh yeah, we're happy to finance your monthly payment over a 10-year period. So you can pay that $30,000 back in small chunks. So anyway, there's the whole weirdness of the Texas market itself, right? Which is just cut off from the rest of the United States. And I will say with a large amount of snark that Texas very much wanted to prevent federal regulation of its power grid and was protective until everything went down. And now all of a sudden they're happy to take FEMA money, right? They'll take the disaster relief, but they don't want any regulation of their electrical power grid. Anyway, let's just touch for a moment, Mariah, on the question of the wind turbines that froze up, which then became the talking point for some of the deniers. I want to make sure that everyone is aware that because of these cost issues in Texas, the ERCOT decided not to buy the cold weather package for the wind turbines. So keep in mind, there's wind turbines operating at the South Pole, right, just fine, because we know how to manage the cold. In Texas, they did not buy that package. And to my mind, it's roughly the equivalent of buying, you know, a snazzy new Maserati car. But in order to save money, you don't put any antifreeze in it. And so when the weather gets cold, the water in your engine block freezes up and destroys the engine. And then you metaphorically can curse the automotive technology as being a piece of junk because the water froze up. Whereas Texas could have bought the antifreeze kit for the wind turbines and they'd all be operating fine. And back to this cost-benefit analysis of those strange weather events. Right, Maria?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like you said, the wind turbines operate in the upper Midwest where cold weather is common and they do just fine. And I think the other thing is that it's the renewable energy power was not a big part of Texas's power grid, right? I think it was only like 10% or something like that. Right. And so, we're not even talking about a big portion of their grid. So
what I read, the majority of the power companies that stopped producing power were because either the valves in the methane gas lines, the valves froze up, so they couldn't open or close the valves, right? So now the plant's got to shut down, or else if there were coal plants, the coal had frozen into the ground and they had no way to sort of dig the coal out in any effective way to get the coal into the boilers. So the cold weather affected almost all the technologies, but since Texas is primarily dependent on natural gas, and that suffered significant hit, it's very disingenuous to say that renewable energy wind turbines caused the problem. And so if you hear that, dear listener, be aware that that's not what happened in Texas.
Right.
So I guess the question I have is what are the bigger lessons for the country? And it seems to me, and I suppose since we live in Massachusetts, in particular here in Massachusetts, I think that we can mock the Texans for not being concerned, not thinking about minus 10 degree weather. But here in Massachusetts, you know, would we be prepared for an extended 120 degree hot heat wave in the summertime? I mean, I'm not sure. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we already are at a point here in Massachusetts where the demand is, we're trying to shave the peak during those hot days in the summer when everyone's got their air conditioning on. If we had a crazy climate event, made everything hot, boy, that would Now, it's my understanding that Massachusetts is much more, since we are a state with a publicly regulated utility, there already is planning, is people thinking about this long-term issue. I saw a report from WBUR saying that the Conservation Law Foundation has requested that the Conservation Law Foundation here is essentially a law firm in Boston. They have gone to the Department of Public Utilities, which is the state people that regulate the utilities, and asking the DPU to mandate that the utilities have much more robust planning for particularly extreme weather events, right? Which is, now is the time to do it. Figure out what are we going to do when there's floods and hot water and everything at the same time, right?
Yeah. But which one do we prepare for?
Well, that's why you have a smart guys in a commission to do that kind of thing. But it's interesting that the how close we are with our internet and all the cool stuff we have electrically, how quickly things turn into the Lord of the Flies, right? Yeah. Two or three days in, with no water, no power, things can get pretty ugly. And it's almost like, should we all be doomsday preppers and have, you know, cans of beans in the basement in case the power goes out for an extended period of time?
Yeah, right? I mean, it's not a stretch, right? I mean, I think if the power in Massachusetts, if we wouldn't be in a similar situation because we have sort of prepared for power outages during the winter, right? I mean, that's the biggest problem, is that Texas just wasn't expecting that. But not to say that we wouldn't be without power at some point. I mean,
well, and the whole question is, and one other interesting perspective on this is that as we move forward, we are committing more and more, in order to reduce carbon emissions, we're going to electrify everything, right? That's the quotation, electrify everything. We're going to have electric vehicles. Our houses are going to be heated and cooled by electricity. We're going to cook with electricity. Everything's going to be electricity. So imagine you go forward to 2035, power goes out. Not only is your water out, but now your car is dead. Right? There's nowhere to, if you're totally dependent on electricity, then it sort of redoubles the necessity to have that electrical grid be resistant to, in fact, there was some place I was listening. I think it was a podcast with Dave Roberts and Chris Hayes saying that, you know, what if we go out to the year 2035 and everything's electrified and the Russians find a way to hack the power grid and turn off all the power in the United States, right? Yeah. You'd literally dead in the water. And so there's lots and lots of scenarios to imagine. But I think this comes back in my mind to the sort of enormity of the Green New Deal and how much work there is to be done. And if we start paying people to do that work, how we get the economy going again, right? There's thousands of jobs of people doing good things to protect us and think about the future. Well, Mariah, I am pretty happy that we're here in dinky old Massachusetts and not down in Texas right now, where they're still trying to just imagine all those people after the power went out, then they didn't have any water, or then clean water. Then the snow melts in the house. And now you got mold in the house. You have to rebuild the whole house.
Yeah. I mean, and just busted pipes. And
it's enormous.
I know.
I'm glad we're here. So what we'll do is we'll put up links to what we talked about on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have an idea about how to protect the grid, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, SoundCloud, et cetera, et cetera. You can find us on Apple Podcast. So please ask your friends to listen to us on their favorite podcast distribution application. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that includes reliability, that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here so reliably week after week. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.